We explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Kamloops at CFBX, or in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And I just want to let you know in advance that next week I'm not going to be here in studio, so Scott T. Scenic Drive, the show just before mine, is going to be in playing an extra hour of ska music. So his show is always great if you want to tune in for that. And I'll be back the following week. So thank you so much for that. And today we are speaking with Brian Leaf. He is the author of Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi, My Humble Quest to Heal My Colitis, Calm My ADD, and Find the Keys to Happiness. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, thank you very much.
How you doing?
Great, doing really well.
Good. So your book, is it supposed to be a comedy, or is this just the...
Well, I'm insulted. No, absolutely. It's meant to be very, very funny, as well as hopefully... are you hearing that on your end?
It sounds like a little bit of breakup, but it's okay.
Oh, it's okay, okay. Yeah, so it is meant to be very, very funny. And also, sorry, it's a lot of static on my end.
I don't know what... We're live on the radio, so you can either keep going or we can hang up the phone and try again.
I know. I'm sorry about that. I've never had that before. Yeah. It's blasted in my ear.
Sorry.
Maybe we should try again.
Okay, well, do you want to call back then?
I'll call you right back.
All right. Okay. So we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
The world's most shocking monster.
That techno rock you guys listen to is godless.
I'm sure.
And the only reason you don't understand our music is that you don't like it.
After I'm gone, your Earth will be free to live out its miserable span of existence.
Can anyone stop their mechanical mail?
All of my most sensitive areas were inflamed. My extremities pulsating with tingling sensation.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology.
Swaying back and forth. A beautiful thing taking me away.
You are a robot.
You must listen to Synaptic Sandwich. Saturday nights from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on CITR FM 101.9.
All right, welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. Let's try this again. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Is that better?
I think we got it this time.
Yay, better connection.
All right, woo-hoo. So to answer your question, the book is meant to be very, very funny and also hopefully somewhat, you know, inspiring and instructive and give people some good advice to follow. But it's meant along the way to be a very fun read.
Cool. Well, yeah, there are some fun... misadventures is a good way to explain it. So let's start with what are the eight keys or the eight tips that you want to get across in your book?
Well, so what happened is as I wrote the book and I noticed different parts of my life, like different segments where I was working on a particular thing, those became what I call the keys to happiness. For example, the first key is do yoga. And if you already do yoga, do more yoga. And then there's meditate, and there's follow your heart, and cultivate your intuition, and become most real. That's the final key.
Fabulous. So let's talk about how, we'll start from the beginning and talk about how you were 17, so just starting college, and you decided to sign up in 1989 for a yoga class, and you get there and you're the only dude because it's 1989. So tell us how that was for you.
That's right. No dudes doing yoga then. Yeah, I my brother had gone to a college where it was very large, a university, and they had lots of all kinds of interesting electives. And so when I went off to Georgetown University in D.C., I wanted to take something, you know, equally strange as he had taken, just sort of emulating my older brother. And the only things I found were like exercise classes, like step aerobics, and then yoga. And so the only really weird thing seemed like yoga. I don't even know what I was expecting. I wish I could think back and really remember that detail of what I was expecting it to look like. But then I got there, and I was the only guy. There were like 30 women and me. And so I thought I was in the wrong place. As I say in the book, I was brainstorming for where I could possibly be, but I had no idea where I was. I thought maybe I was in some sort of jazzercise class, or maybe like an instructive class about dating at Georgetown or something. And so then the teacher showed up, though, and he was in all whites, and he had these leather sandals and this big, huge beard, and now I knew I was in store for something good.
Sweet. So now at that point, were you a vegetarian, or did that come after the yoga?
That came later, actually, and I'm actually not a vegetarian now. Is that okay to say?
No. Sure.
But I at the time, I was not at all a vegetarian, and as I got into yoga, actually, I'm sure a lot of people and a lot of listeners have the same experience. As I got into yoga, I kind of, my body woke up, you know, and my awareness of my body woke up. And thing by thing, sort of food by food, I started altering what I ate, not by dietary guidelines, but just by what felt right. You know, like it suddenly felt, no surprise, it suddenly felt really horrible to eat those like disgusting, spongy chicken patties in the cafeteria. It's like before I just never thought about it. They looked delicious. They tasted salty, and I ate them. But suddenly, you know, if you come after a yoga class and eat one of those or go to a yoga class afterwards, one could really tell, and I could really tell, like, hey, my body doesn't really like this. This isn't food. And so, you know, piece by piece, I started altering what I ate. And it was cool because it came from the inside, not just from reading a book or from guidelines.
So what, Noah, did you had colitis at 17 years old?
Exactly. So I grew up in New Jersey, and I don't know if, you know, folks all over all over Canada and the U.S. know, but New Jersey's pretty intense. And I was very intense. I was the first place debater in New Jersey, and I was a super straight-A student, and I was very, very stressed out. And worst of all, I held my stress in, you know. I would say in hindsight, that was really the big part. And so, yeah, when I was 16, I came down with ulcerative colitis, which is like an ulcer in the colon. I got really sick. I lost a ton of weight. And I was really, really ill. And, you know, I went to different doctors and got the right diagnosis and the right medicine, and I got better. But then 2 years later, the colitis came back, and the doctor gave me the meds, and I went for, you know, exams and all that, and it wasn't working. And so I was really scared, and the doctor told me, you know, sometimes the second time around, it's harder to get under control. He talked about surgery, talked about a colostomy bag, all kinds of terrifying things.
Wow.
I was, you know, really worried. And then one day, and now this makes total sense, but at the time it was a huge leap for me. You know, one day I realized that the days where I did yoga, my symptoms were a little better. And so I decided to go for it. I decided to self-medicate with yoga. So I did yoga 5 times a day. For 15, 20 minutes. And it did what the medicine at that point couldn't do. 3 days later, literally, my symptoms were gone.
Wow. So let's talk a bit about what you did, and then why do you think the symptoms were gone? What do you think was the process there?
Okay, good question. So the main thing that I did was sun salutations. And at the time, I didn't really think about why that might be helping me. I don't know. I think I really just was moved. I think I just had guidance. I don't know. I'm really not sure how I knew to do that or why I did it. I mean, it seems like a huge leap. I guess I just realized. I guess it's the simplest of leaps, really. You know, it's like you feel something helps, so you do more of it. And I guess I just felt that the sun salutations helped, so I did an awful lot of them. And the reason I think they helped, at the most general level, I think they helped because sun salutations in yoga, as many people probably know, it's a series of 12 forward and backward bending movements, really, the sun salutation. And so I think essentially I was massaging, basically, and stretching and relaxing and massaging my colon, you know, my organs, allowing the blood to flow better, allowing healing to happen better. So on a physical level, I think it was like getting a really good massage, and in the internal organs too, just helping them do their job better, releasing stress and strain and tension, literally. And then more subtly speaking, I think that, as I said, I think my colitis was, and I like Ayurveda, the medical side of yoga, now that I've learned about it, because it actually is a language for all this, even for the energetic side. I think energetically, there was a lot of emotional and energetic blockage and buildup in my gut, basically in my GI, from just repressing my feelings, repressing my emotions, just storing fear and anger down there. And I think that, you know, the sun salutations, like acupuncture, you know, freed up the meridians, freed up the energy channels in my body, and allowed all that backed up energy that was burning an ulcer in my colon, basically, to release.
So you were doing the sun salutations, and then your symptoms went away, and then, so did you stop doing yoga? Is that why they came back, or what happened?
Well, no, I mean, as you can imagine, after that, I was, you know, sort of a zealot, you know, walking around handing out pamphlets about yoga. Not really, but I was very, you know, very into yoga after that. My friends, I think, used to get annoyed with me sometimes. I would talk about yoga all the time, pretty much exclusively. But then, I went down. Obviously, I didn't do it 5 times a day from then on. I went down to, you know, once a day, once every other day, and I got really into it, and I started exploring, you know, the more subtle aspects of it. I started reading about it. Actually, when I was at Georgetown, any research paper I could do that was remotely related to yoga, I would do it about yoga. Even in management class, I started writing papers about yoga. And then 2 years later, the colitis came back. Why did it come back? Well, my doctor had once explained to me that colitis was the kind of disease that goes into remission and comes back often at predictable intervals, sometimes with a trigger like stress or whatever. And I guess for me, it was a 2-year cycle. So 2 years later, it came back. And, you know, this time I caught it right away, which obviously helps. And I went right into my, I was doing yoga, like I said, once or twice, or once a day, or maybe every other day. And I went back into my 5 times a day. And again, the symptoms went away. And actually, that was the last time I had it.
Fabulous. And so now how often do you do yoga now?
Well, now, so, you know, 20 years later, that's interesting, because for originally yoga postures, you know, when we talk about yoga, we often mean yoga postures was my primary practice. Over the years, I've gotten into meditation and other aspects of yoga. And I mean, I definitely practice every day now. For a while, actually, I was away from the postures. I have 2 kids now. I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. And, you know, I write books and I work and I'm super busy. So for a while, actually, the postures were kind of secondary to meditation more recently for me. And so for a while, I wasn't doing postures, but I really started feeling it. I started feeling kind of stiff. I'm 40 now, you know, I'm not 20. And I started feeling stiff. And so I just recently got back into making sure I do the postures every day. And it feels great. I have a whole new kind of energy and aliveness that I was feeling a little like deadened at the end of every day. But I've always been meditating as well.
Wonderful. So now let's talk about your ADD.
Okay. Go ahead. Or do you want me to get into it?
Go ahead. And yeah,
all right.
How did it come about, and how did yoga help?
Yeah. So about 9 years after that second colitis incident that we talked about, I was living in Princeton, New Jersey. I'd graduated Georgetown, and I'd traveled around a lot. Pretty much almost every year I'd moved somewhere. Sometimes to study yoga, sometimes to study meditation, sometimes because I met a friend or a new girlfriend or whatever, and I would move around and I would go different places. And so 9 years later, I was in Princeton, New Jersey, and I was seeing a therapist, a psychotherapist, and she suggested that maybe I had ADD. You know, and her reasoning, one thing she said I remember is, you know, she was sort of saying, maybe, you know, it's not just that you're this free-spirited hippie who wanders around all the time, but maybe it's hard for you. You know, it's challenging. It challenges you to stay with something, to stay with a relationship, to stay living in one place, to, you know, commit to a job. Maybe it's not just that you're free, but you're actually challenged in this way. And, you know, the way you react when someone says something you know is true, I kind of was defensive or kind of angry. And then I got really sad, and I thought maybe she's right. You know, I thought maybe I'm really limited in this way. And I was really worried for a couple of days and sad, I think because I knew she was right. And then I remembered, and the situation with the yoga with colitis, I remembered, you know, I hadn't thought much about it in years. I mean, 9 years is a long time, especially to a 30-year-old. And so I suddenly remembered, hey, you know, maybe maybe like yoga helped my colitis and I don't have it anymore. The doctor said I'd always have colitis. Maybe something could help the ADD. Maybe there's something out there, a way I could change my lifestyle, something natural, you know, I could do that would change it, change the situation, you know, thinking outside the box. And so I dove in. I did research and I read everything I could. And finally, I found something that talked about how in Ayurveda, which I mentioned, which is the medical side of yoga, how in Ayurveda there was an imbalance that could look like ADD. So that was it. So now I dove into Ayurveda and I did a training in it and I saw practitioners. And I incorporated a lot of things into my lifestyle. And over time, I did become less distractible, more focused, more able to commit, stay with something, you know, write books, you know, see a project through. And it helped, just like the yoga helped the colitis.
Awesome. So it's time for a break, and we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment. I want to hear more about the Ayurveda and all about your book. So we are talking with Brian Leaf. He is the author of Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi, My Humble Quest to Heal My Colitis, Calm My ADD, and Find the Keys to Happiness. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. And just a reminder, I won't be here next week. So Ska T from Ska T's Scenic Drive is going to do an extra hour of ska music. So you can tune in next week for that, and we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Last year, over 650 BC teens aged out of foster care without a permanent family.
Adoption is not just for babies. Teens need families too. Only 24 teens in BC were adopted last year.
November is Adoption Awareness Month. To find out more about adopting a teen, contact the Adoptive Families Association of BC. Call 1-877-ADOPT-07 or visit us at bcadopt.com.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
Bad news, nobody.
On Friday, June 22nd, Shaw Cable will be discontinuing their FM channels, meaning they will no longer broadcast CITR. Aww. It's a good thing we have this big antenna. CITR, still 101.9 on your FM dial and online at citr.ca.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Brian Leaf. He's the author of Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi, My Humble Quest to Heal My Colitis, Calm My ADD, and Find the Key to Happiness. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thank you very much.
So what is the key to happiness? Is it the eight keys, or is there one special key?
That's a good question. I one time heard someone describe the yamas and niyamas. Those are the sort of do's and don'ts, the Ten Commandments in yoga. You could pick up any one of them and all the other ones follow. So I think it's the same with what I call the keys to happiness. I think if you pick up any one of them really dutifully, they all follow. They're all pretty linked. So I don't know that there's any one key. I think that any one of them will lead you there. I guess if there was one thing that really occurred to me, it's to follow your intuition. You know, it's tap into and follow your intuition or your heart and come and live from that place. I think really that is the key to happiness. And the reason I think that's true is because I think what we all really want is to feel connected. Everything we do is to try to feel connected, I think. And so I think that, you know, living from the mind, I just don't think it's really possible to connect in the deep, deep way that we want. And I think ultimately to really feel connected, it's got to come from a heartfelt connection, from living from the heart. So I think that's the key.
I love that. It is something that is an ongoing theme in my life and on this show, always talking about how to really know the difference between intuition and your mind. Because there's so many times that, especially when we're on a journey of healing or personal growth, sometimes we try to break our habits. And so often when we have an intuition, the next instinct is to question, is this really an intuition or am I following old habits?
I know. It's challenging and it's terrifying sometimes, right? I mean, especially when you're really shedding old habits and trying to break out of the conditioned habitual kind of, you know, patterns that one feels doesn't serve them. It's really scary. I have a couple of things that I do. One is that, you know, I love the idea that as we listen to our intuitions more and more and more, they really get louder. It's like, you know, it's like a voice in a crowd. If you don't listen to it, it stops talking eventually. And for most of us, or many of us, that's what our intuition is. It's a voice that just stopped talking. And so we got to stoke that fire back up. We got to ask it. And then when it speaks, so to speak, we got to listen to it. And everybody that I've read about agrees with that. Even, you know, mainstream sort of writers, Malcolm Gladwell talks about the way to build intuition is to, you know, listen to it. And each time we listen to it, it grows stronger. And I feel like as I've done that, a lot of times I know, and I wonder if listeners would agree with this, a lot of times we know what the intuition is, what the inner guidance is. And we just, I don't know, it's so darn hard to listen to it sometimes. I mean, I have that all the time. Right now I'm fighting one of those battles, actually, one of those internal battles.
Care to share?
And the other trick I have for myself is that I find, again, the heart. You know, I find if I'm not sure of something, if I'm like, oh, is this, you know, if I'm wondering, is this a fear speaking, or is this ego speaking, or is this real intuition? I find if I go to a body-oriented, heart-centered practice, gentle yoga, you know, tai chi, a walk in the woods, you know, a gentle walk, not where I'm pumping it, but a real gentle walk. You know, I light candles and sit in front of my altar, and I really call upon that practice. I find that, you know, as my mind settles, as my mind calms and quiets, if it's a real intuition, it'll stay loud as everything else quiets. If it's just fear or ego, it'll quiet down as everything else quiets, and it'll go away, and then I know it was just fear or ego.
Cool. Well, now I'm curious about this struggle. Do you want to talk about it, or?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, it's not a big thing, as they often are. You know, it's just a little thing, but it's something I'm really aware of. So this book, the book we're talking about, Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi, came out about a month and a half ago. And I'm working on a new book, which is called Misadventures of a Parenting Yogi. Yeah. And so really my guidance is absolutely telling me, my energy, my intuition, whatever word you want to call it, is telling me to work on writing this new book. Whereas my mind, my fear, my ego wants to spend all my time, you know, just surfing the internet, checking my Amazon rating, promoting this book. I don't know, sending out emails or wasting time checking rankings on Barnes & Noble or Amazon or and those things make sense to do, not checking Amazon obsessively, but other things promotion-wise make sense to do. But my guidance is absolutely telling me just hunker down and work on the new book. And it's so hard to listen to because the fear says, hey, if you don't work on promoting this book, if you don't reach out to 100 people a day, whatever, then, you know, nobody's going to hear about the book and it'll be wasted. But my intuition, my guidance is saying, nope, leave it, you know, leave that to fate. You got to let that alone. For whatever reason, I don't know why, leave that alone and work on the new book.
Hmm. Well, I know that urge to be promoting and be on the computer, and it's, you can waste a whole day, like, just doing nothing.
Yeah. And I'm glad you asked about that, too, because it's like, you know, it's funny. I wonder what people were expecting, you know, when I said that and then when you asked about it, because I think that's a very real-world sin, you know, thing. We're not talking about, it's not always these life-changing things, you know. It's not even like take a new job or, you know, I don't know, leave your job or, you know, leave your partner or something. They don't always have to be these huge things. Sometimes they're small, but when the feeling is there, I'm really committed to you know, working hard to listen to those. I just think that's so key, so critical. I really think that's the key towards, you know, freedom and peace and abundance.
I love that. It is the little things, because the little things add up to bigger things. And so if we start pushing our intuitions aside about like, oh, I need to do more yoga, or I need to go for a walk in the woods, or I need to spend less time on the computer, then the stress starts to build up over time. And then we have these bigger issues that we have no choice but to deal with.
Absolutely. And I love, you know, using the small ones as a practice ground, as a, you know, practice field for when the bigger ones come. And sometimes the little ones can really prove to us. I mean, I've had, you know, like there are times in my life where I've really opened up to this, you know, saying, you know, I'm going to follow it 24/7. I remember I used to do this experiment where I would walk around town just trying to tap into energy and my intuition and follow that. And it would lead me to some amazing adventures, you know, as I talk about in the book, on my trip, or even just on a day-to-day basis. I remember I met an energy worker like 20 years ago, and I was talking about this stuff as I was starting to get into it. And I remember she said, you know, one day when you get really into this, you'll go to a store and you're presented with 20 brands of toothpaste, you know, and you just tap into your intuition and you'll know which one to grab. And I thought she was, you know, crazy. But I totally believe that now. I think that I have that experience every day.
Cool. So now I'm curious, what do you think? Lately, I've been having conversations with people about their beliefs and about religion and God and all of that. So what do you think that force is that guides you? What are your beliefs around that?
That is a good question. I haven't spent too much time thinking about that because I just feel it. And I feel like it may not even be my place to know what it is, but I really do feel it. And I think the key is to listen to those feelings. In fact, on the flip side, I've been really wary lately of, for some time actually, of studies. You know, a lot of like popular literature will include a lot of studies in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really wary of studies because I just feel like they take us away from that inner knowing, actually. So I don't know. I haven't even studied, so to speak, what I think that is. I guess if I had to say, I think it's like, you know, there's a quote in my book. I attended a talk once by Ram Dass, great speaker and a great, you know, great person. And he talked about, he said, there are three kinds of people in the world, or there's three ways to be in the world, is what he was saying. And he's saying the first way to be in the world is to think that we're all separate. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and you're responsible for yourself. And that's unfortunate. There's a lot of suffering in that way. The second, and he said, you know, he was very honest, and he was very humble. He said, you're all mostly in that place. Mm-hmm. And he was right, you know. And then he said, the second way to be in the world is to realize we're all connected. And he said, I'm in that space. Speaking of himself, he said, I'm in that place. And he was very humble. I mean, you know, he wasn't bragging. I think it's true. I think he is, you know. And then he said, and there's a third place. And that's to realize that we're all one. We're not connected. We're just literally this one. You know, we're all one organism. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that's true. And maybe the energy that we're talking about is like the blood flowing through this organism that we all are. Maybe it's the energy system of this organism that we all are.
Ooh, that made me smile. I love that. That's I mean, we were talking about this just the other night about how the planet is alive, and I don't know exactly like if it has a consciousness, like an intelligent consciousness, like we would, well, arrogantly call ourselves intelligent. But it definitely has some life to it, and survival instincts, and the things that it shifts itself to kind of come back to homeostasis eventually, no matter what we do to the planet. It eventually heals itself in whatever way it has to. And so I think I love what you said about us being all one organism, even though it's hard to imagine that, because even when we make an effort to be connected, we are so, our separateness is so apparent too.
Yeah. 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 The way I imagine it sometimes is that I imagine that there's like a God, let's say, and God is imagining this this like world, and that's us. And so it's like we are all the same. We're all just part of God, and we're in his imagination, or her imagination. And so we're all separate but the same. We're all just the same in this imagination. I think that's cool. I think that's probably, I don't know.
Who are we to know? I mean, do we need to know? I think sometimes we get caught up in trying to search for the truth or what is real. And from our perspective, we might not be privy to that.
I think that's the key. I honestly do. I mean, I think it's interesting to talk about. And it was, you know, that it's neat stuff, but I think ultimately that is the key. It's like that, you know, famous story about the Buddha where somebody's been shot by an arrow, and I don't know the story. I think, you know, and he basically says, don't worry about who shot the arrow. Let's just get it out. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like that. I think that, you know, it may not be our place right now to know where the arrow came from, but just to be in the experience of the arrow. It's actually like the yoga, like the sun salutations I did in college. If I had thought too much about why them or why do it, who knows, maybe I wouldn't have even done it. But I had just some weird lark. I just knew it felt right, so I did it. And that's why I think the best knowledge, the best information I think we have available to us is this inner guidance, this inner wisdom.
So, Brian, do you find that the yoga helps you to tap into that more?
Oh, no question. Definitely. And meditation, definitely. I mean, I think that, yeah, I think getting grounded and getting, like I said, getting in my heart, quieting my mind. Quieting the mind is the key, I think. I think in the absence, I'm sure a lot of meditators and a lot of listeners have the same experience. You know, a lot of times the best guidance comes from a quiet mind. You know, like when I'm meditating, actually the whole book I wrote from my meditations, I would, the way I literally wrote it is each day I would go to my meditation cushion at my altar, I'd light candles and I'd meditate. And then out of nowhere, this idea would bubble up, this old story, and I would go off to my computer and I would write it down. And then I'd go meditate some more and then I'd write it again. I see most clearly with a quiet mind, because otherwise the mind, you know, otherwise my mind is filled with what I want and my, you know, my ego, meaning what I want, you know, the things I think that are going to make me happy or the things I think I want. To really see the truth is one of the reasons it's so hard, is because it's often not what we imagine. You know, like it makes total sense. Like if I'm just thinking with my head, if I spend 10 hours a day promoting my book, that's obviously better than not spending 10 hours a day promoting my book. But if my intuition tells me I shouldn't do that, then I got to listen to that.
So how?
And it's only as a quiet mind that I'm going to even have a chance at listening to that. Sometimes the thing that the wisdom tells us to do just doesn't make any sense. So that's why, you know, it's got to be with the quiet mind, because otherwise we're just so biased by our ideas. And
so, Brian, I'm curious now, now that you have this intuition and you know that your intuition is guiding you to do that, so are you actually following it?
Definitely. I'm very committed. Oh, you mean specifically with this one thing?
Yeah.
It's been a challenge, but yes, I finally am. And actually, when I don't follow my intuition, I get really depressed. And then I wind up, you know, I don't know, eating sugar, checking my email more. And when I follow my intuition, I get really high, just clear and high and happy. So I feel like I owe it to my kids to follow my intuition, because I want to come home happy, you know? So I am, actually. I wasn't for a couple weeks, simply because it was like I was overpowered by it. It was very difficult. And I was being mindful that I wasn't, which is useful, too. You know, it's important we don't turn this process, or one doesn't turn this process for themselves, you know, your listeners or whoever wants to try it. It's important to not turn it into another just shame and guilt war. It's hard to do these things. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like choosing to hike the Pacific Coast Trail, or what do they call the Pacific Rim Trail, you know, or the Appalachian Trail, or to climb a mountain, or you got to build up to it. It's work. It's everyday practice. That's why we call it practice. So, you know, for a couple of weeks I wasn't, and I was depressed. It like really took a toll on me, and now I am.
Wonderful. Well, Brian, I'm also curious, in your book you mentioned, you're talking about the Grateful Dead, and the people who I think had introduced you to the Grateful Dead were kind of, they smoked a lot of pot. And you mentioned just a minute ago the word high. When you're following your intuition, you get high. And you also mentioned in that chapter how it seems like people who are smoking pot are after the same kind of effects that you get from yoga. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've noticed that a lot of people who I knew in college and, you know, who smoked for a decade or so, many of them did it because they were feeling like a deep anxiety or a deep fear or a discomfort, social discomfort, you know, anything like that. And a lot of people smoked to cover that, and it made it feel better. You know, it made it feel, made them feel less socially uncomfortable or awkward, or made them feel more charismatic, or made them feel not anxious or not afraid. But it's my experience that over time I've noticed, and this isn't a judgment, you know, just an observation, really. Maybe a little bit of a judgment, but I try to not have a judgment. But I noticed over time that, you know, that a lot of those folks would wind up very, very anxious. And I think it's the same as I talked about with my colitis, actually. You know, colitis, in my case, was a manifestation of repressed emotion built up over time. Basically, you know, that all this energy bouncing around in there that ate an ulcer in my colon wall. And I think that it's the same with these emotions. I think that a lot of times the anxiety is still there. It's just really stored down. And maybe if somebody didn't smoke pot to release it, you know, constantly, somebody didn't smoke all the time, then they would be forced either to deal with the feelings, the emotions, the fears, the anxiety, or maybe they would, you know, see a therapist and work on it or do retreats. You know, they would be encouraged or possibly forced to deal with it, or maybe they would just kind of get really angry one day and blow up and release some of the steam, as opposed to keeping it in.
Cool.
And so I think yoga deals with those same things, but in a free and more healthy way. Well, I guess yoga's not so free anymore. But
well, you can do it for free in your home.
You can. Yeah, you can. You can. And it's probably cheaper than pot. I don't really know how much pot is now, but it's got to be cheaper.
Oh, well, I guess BC, it's pretty cheap here. Probably cheaper than yoga. But anyway, we won't talk about that. Why would I know the price of that? anyway, so that's a good segue into becoming most real, because obviously when we are under the influence of some kind of narcotic, we're not being most real. So what do you mean by becoming most real, and how do you get there?
Yeah, so, you know, at the beginning of the interview, you asked me if the book was a comedy, and it is kind of a comedy, because I think in hindsight, when I wrote it, it was my intention to really just let it all hang out and give people an experience of being most real, like give people an experience of just a very authentic space where we're not afraid to just talk about whatever and just say whatever, you know, because the experience of being human in this imperfect, you know, aging body is funny. You know, the body makes all these crazy noises and digest, and we eat stuff, and we poop, and it's just crazy, you know? And little kids are crazy. The whole thing is, you know, funny. And so becoming most real is about really being authentic. It's about being real. So the experience for me of it was that one day when I was meditating, I realized, I guess my mindfulness sort of, I suddenly realized that every moment, literally every moment, and I think a lot of people do this, every moment I was like rejecting what I thought or felt. Every moment I was, I don't know, I guess you could say I was saying I wasn't enough or I was disbelieving, but I would feel something in particular. I would feel something I didn't want to feel. I'd feel angry or I'd feel sad. And I would immediately go into like evasive maneuvers to not feel that. I would brainstorm for something funny, a Seinfeld episode I'd seen, you know, whatever. And so one day it occurred to me, like, what would it feel like, you know, to sit with this feeling, not turn away from it, but to sit with it. So I started doing that. You know, I'd be sitting meditating and I'd realize I was sad. You know, like, and you got to dig down, or I would have to dig down. My emotions aren't at the surface sometimes historically. So I would dig down a little bit, get more mindful, drop down into myself, get quiet. And suddenly I'd realize I was really sad. And I would, you know, immediately jump out of that. For some reason, sadness was too uncomfortable, or I, you know, didn't like it or something. And so I said, well, what if I sit with that sadness? So I would just sit with it. And I would just like watch it and just stare at it and sit with it. And over time, there'd be this burst, like this really like this splitting the atom, this like burst of energy. And suddenly I was like high. I was happy and just like elated. So I started doing that all the time. And eventually it changed a little bit because I realized that staring at the emotion to try to get rid of it was sort of the same thing as I was doing before. It was still judging the emotion. So I shifted to just acknowledging the emotion. And now this time there was a burst, but it was gentler. It was like sweeter. And so becoming most real means checking into how we're feeling, what we're feeling, and what we're doing with that, and just being really aware of that. So saying, how do I feel right now? I wonder if we could do that for a second. Is it okay if I leave that for a second?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do it. So if you're listening to this, you can sit there You can close your eyes if you want to, and you can just sort of feel your butt on the chair if you're on a chair or a sofa or in your car seat. You can't close your eyes if you're driving, but you can still feel. And, you know, just feel the clothes on your body. Feel your butt in the chair or your pants on your legs. Feel your feet in your shoes. You can even feel the hair on your head as it rests on your face or your head. Just really become mindful in that way. And then just reach deeper and ask yourself, what's most real? What am I feeling right now? And just notice. And then best of all, notice what you do with that. Notice if you're feeling sad, maybe you try to not feel sad, or you feel happy and you don't want to lose it. So it's a level deeper. It's not just noticing you're happy. It's noticing what you're doing with that. So let's do that. I'm going to stop talking for just 5 seconds, and we'll let people do that. Just dig in and just feel more deeply. And so I find when I can do that, I find that when I can notice not only that I'm feeling sad, but that, oh, I'm trying to stop it, or I'm trying to hold on to it. When I notice that, there's a huge shift. My body relaxes. My heart opens. And I think the reason for it is because when I do that, you know, to use meditation terms, I shift from being lost in that experience to actually dropping deeper into my, like, truer self, into that God self we talk about, into that intuitive wisdom, the inner wisdom. You know, it's like Deepak Chopra has this trick. I think he says, you know, what does he say? Imagine a flower. And then he says, now imagine yourself imagining the flower, or think about the fact that you were thinking about a flower. Who's doing that? You know, it's like the deeper you get into just being the experience of you and not just the experience of being lost and feeling angry or sad, then it's like we touch that deepest part of ourselves. And that's where the intuition is born too.
Thank you. Well, that was really powerful. And I hope everyone listening was following along with that. And I notice you mentioned the sadness and the happiness and how I do that all the time. I feel like I'm feeling sad. I don't want to feel sad. I don't want to feel sad. How can I feel better? Instead of just sitting with it. And then I suffer through, like, trying to push it away. Instead, I could just sit with it and allow it to pass. But I don't, because I'm stubborn. And then when I am happy, I'm not quite as aware of grasping at that happiness, but when you said it, I felt truth in that. How when we do have moments of happiness, instead of truly enjoying and being present with that happiness, we're thinking, how can I make this last longer?
Yeah, totally, totally.
Why do we do that?
Why is that?
Yeah, why?
Is that what you said?
Pardon?
Did you say why?
Yeah, why do we do that to ourselves?
Yeah, well, I'm curious to see what you think. But
I don't know.
I think it's because, this is what I think. I think when we're feeling happy, it gives us permission to be present. It gives us permission to be in the present moment. Like, for those 10 seconds that I feel really happy, I used to notice that I would do this thing where maybe once a week I felt the way I should, thought I should. You know, I felt like happy and relaxed and at peace and wasn't angry at anybody. And then the rest of the week, I'd say, oh, you know, the other day I was feeling good, but now I've messed up. I'm not feeling that now. And I'd like blame myself. And so I think the reason we like to feel happy, don't want to lose it, is because feeling happy or good, a good run, I don't know, sex, I don't know, you know, something that makes you feel good, it's permission to be present. Whereas, like, you know, we use sadness and anger and all that as permission to not be present. We don't like it. We reject it. And that feels terrible. I mean, not being present, taking our energy out of the present moment, it's really depleting. And so I think happiness gives us permission to be present so we like it. And so I think the key is to, you know, what I practice, this is becoming most real. What I practice is if I can say, oh, I'm feeling sad. Oh, I notice I'm trying not to feel sad. I don't know, that's a huge difference for me. It makes this really subtle but huge difference, because if I just say, oh, I'm feeling sad, stop it. Let yourself feel sad. I'm still being pretty mean to myself, and I'm still denying reality. The reality is I'm feeling sad, and the reality is I'm trying not to feel sad. So becoming most real says, oh, I'm feeling sad, and I'm trying not to feel sad, and suddenly, whoosh, I drop in. I'm sitting where I really am, and I'm present. And then I can feel just as happy as when I'm happy. You know what I mean?
That I love that. It's interesting how we're so mean to ourselves. Someone said to me the other day that I was the most positive person they know. And I thought, God, this person really needs to get some happier friends. Because I hear myself complaining all the time, and I think half the time, I mean, I try to be positive, but a lot of the time I feel like I'm a pretty negative person, and I guess other people see me as positive because I do this show and all that, but I'm always striving, and when I am negative, I'm judging myself, and presence is just so much easier.
Yeah. Maybe you're present with the fact that you're judging yourself. I mean, I think that's the key. I had a friend once. I remember she told me that her parents had passed away. You know, they were older. But obviously, she was very sad. And she was a longtime meditation teacher. It's a long time ago. And she was telling me that she bumped into somebody, and they said, oh, you know, what's new? You look so vibrant. You know, she was almost like offended or felt guilty. She said, I don't feel vibrant. My parents just passed away. And she realized that she looked vibrant to them because her parents had passed away, and she was feeling super sad and grieving. But she was really present with those feelings. She wasn't guilting herself. She wasn't trying to block them, you know. And she was out of the, you know, crying all day phase. She was in the next phase. But she was present with her feelings. And so she looked really vibrant to this person because she was flowing energy. You know, she was allowing her energy to flow freely. And that's vibrance.
So it sounds like you're saying vibrance is authenticity.
That's what I believe. I believe vitality and vibrance is authenticity, freely flowing energy. You know, I studied Bach flower essences, Dr. Edward Bach, and I love his teachings, the idea of his flower essences. You know, they're those little bottles in the health food stores. And his idea is that what causes sickness of any kind, mental, physical, is when there's a dissonance between our true self and the way we're showing up in the world. I think his words are personality and ego. I can't remember, but when there's a dissonance between the callings of your true self and the way we choose to act in the world, when those aren't when those are at odds, when those are not a freely flowing energy, then there's sickness, mental, physical, emotional. So I totally agree with that. I think that the goal, my goal, and I mean, I'm not there yet. It's a work in process every day. It's hard work. It's like, you know, working out. It's a practice. But my goal is to allow, you know, the way I am in the world to reflect how I'm feeling. And it doesn't even have to be how you are in the world, right? It can also be just being mindful of how we're feeling. I mean, sometimes it's not appropriate to get really mad or cry or whatever, you know. But sometimes it is. But sometimes it's not. But either way, to be true, to be authentic and honest in one's own experience, at least in one's own, to oneself.
I love that. Well, it's time for another quick break, and we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment. We are speaking right now with Brian Leaf, the author of Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi, My Humble Quest to Heal My Colitis, Calm My ADD, and Find the Key to Happiness. It is a very funny read, and you're going to get a lot out of it, so do check that out. And we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment. Coming up in just a few minutes here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific, so stick around for that as well.
The question, what kind of cities do we want to live in? How do we want our cities to be? Cannot be divorced from the question of what kind of people we want to be.
Join me, your host, Andrew Longhurst, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for The City, an hour dedicated to critical discussions of urban issues. Live on CITR 101.9 FM and CITR.ca. For more info, visit thecityfm.org.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. We're speaking with Brian Leaf. He's the author of Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thank you.
So, do you have a website, or you have misadventures-of-yogi.com?
Misadventures. That's right, and it also, I simplified it actually, since that was a bit of a mouthful too. If people type in misadventuresofayogi.com, they'll get there.
All one word. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And so you also are director of the New Leaf Learning Center. I don't know if you want to quickly mention that before we wrap up. We just have a few minutes left.
Sure. So I have it's a learning center in Western Mass, and we work with kids and adults in managing ADD and organizational skills and, you know, any kind of academic work as well. We do like holistic tutoring, I like to call it. The underlying key, I like to help kids build self-confidence, and sometimes we do it through the most mundane things, which is sort of what we're talking about here. I think a lot of times the spiritual work happens through the most mundane things.
I love that. And yeah, it's there's so much. I mean, thank you so much for engaging in this conversation with me, because I know we haven't totally been focused on your book, and I do want to promote that, Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi. But I really appreciate you philosophizing with me this hour. It's been a lot of fun. And I'm wondering, what's the most important thing that you want people to take away from your book and from today's interview?
Actually, I wonder what was at play when you chose to not ask me about the book that much, but to instead philosophize about it, because that would be the thing that I want people to take away. I don't know if I wonder if you had a hunch or an intuition, because it was just right for me. It was great. It was perfect. And so the thing that I would ask people to take away, or you know, what you just said, is to try to make an intention, not try to, but to make an intention to listen to those as they come up over the next day or couple of days. You know, if you have a feeling, a deep feeling, and of course you got to follow the yamas and niyamas. If the feeling is to hurt somebody or lie or steal, you don't follow it, obviously. But if it's an earnest feeling, a deep feeling from a deep place, and it just feels really right, you know, to go for it and to try it, and then to follow through and watch it and see how it feels. How do you feel afterwards? How do you feel during? Does something abundant happen? That would be what I would ask. And like I said, for you, I don't know if that was a hunch or an intuition yet, but for me, it was just right. I mean, it was really refreshing and really nice to have this really personal conversation with you and to really get into it and let it flow, you know, organically. I thought that was really wonderful and beautiful. So I actually appreciate that you let that happen.
Well, thank you very much. I had a good time, and I sometimes feel like I want to talk about the book and I want to promote it, but then if you give away everything in the book, then what's the point of reading the book?
Sure.
I did want to ask you about the prostitute, and I'm going to leave that as a cliffhanger so people will go and read the book.
Right. There is a scene accidentally with a prostitute in the book. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. It's humorous. It's funny. So, yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, but we kind of talked about other stuff that was more important anyway. Yeah.
You don't usually talk about prostitution and intuition in the same call, but see, here we go.
Well, there you go. But you never, I mean, there. I'm not going to get into that whole topic.
Right, you never know. Yeah, when you're following the intuition, anything can happen.
Exactly. Open another can of worms. But it has been such a pleasure to speak with you. Is there anything else you want to add before we close the show?
Let's see. I know most of your listeners are Canadian, I suspect, or many of them are. So I apologize for the. My wife is Canadian, so I apologize for the Canadian jokes in the book.
Aw. That's okay. One thing about Canadians is we're really good at laughing at ourselves.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, there's only one joke. Most of them, yeah, there's only one.
All right. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Take care, Brian. Bye. So again, that was Brian Leaf. His book is Misadventures of a Garden State Yogi, My Humble Quest to Heal My Colitis, Calm My ADD, and Find the Key to Happiness. Coming up next is Parts Unknown with Chris Arific. And next week, Scotty is going to have an extended show of Scotty's Scenic Drive because I'm going to be away. So thank you so much. I want to send my undying love to you. Peace, love, happiness. I love you so much. Namaste. Thank you.
clearly the truth of the enlightened
song called Broken Hearted Beast.